Welcome to CHOATS Enforcement and Investigations Updates, a podcast series hosted by our Government Enforcement and Compliance Group. On this show, we discuss timely analysis of legal and compliance developments, court decisions, and changes in legislation and regulations related to white-collar defense, global investigations, and whistleblower claims.
Hello and welcome to all of our listeners. I'm Emily Hodge, a partner in the Government Enforcement Group here at CHOATE. With me today is Kristen Perriello, a principal in the group. As you are no doubt aware, recently there have been a number of significant False Claims Act cases and decisions. Today we'll focus our discussion on the ongoing debate over the appropriate causation standard in False Claims Act cases that are premised on anti-kickback statute violations, including the most recent decision arising out of the First Circuit in the Regeneron case. Kristen, could you start by providing an overview of the issues here for those who may be unfamiliar with it?
Yes. So in 2010, Congress amended the anti-kickback statute to add a provision that states that a claim resulting from, and that's the key language, a violation of the anti-kickback statute constitutes a false claim for purposes of the False Claims Act. In the years that have followed, courts have construed this resulting from language as a causation requirement. But the question then becomes, what causation standard applies? Some courts, including the Third Circuit and district courts in the Second, Fourth, and Fifth Circuits, have adopted a relaxed standard, which merely requires some link between the kickback and the claim. In those cases, the fact that the healthcare professional would have prescribed the drug absent the kickback may be viewed as irrelevant. It's worth noting, however, that many of these district court decisions were rendered prior to any court adopting a different causation standard. Other courts, including those in the Sixth and Eighth Circuits and now the First Circuit in a unanimous opinion in the Regeneron case, have adopted a but-for causation standard, meaning that a healthcare professional would not have prescribed a drug but for the kickback provided by the pharmaceutical manufacturer. This is arguably a more difficult standard for the government and relators to satisfy. In the recent Regeneron ruling, the First Circuit explained that there was no textual reason to deviate from the presumption that the resulting from language required proof of but-for causation. The court went on to reject the government's three proffered contextual reasons for departing from the language's plain meaning, explaining that there were no indications that anything aside from but-for causation was required in the 2010 amendment to the anti-kickback statute or its legislative history, or in the anti-kickback statute and False Claims Act statutes themselves. The court also rejected the government's claim that requiring but-for causation would make it too difficult to prove False Claims Act violations, explaining that the false certification pathway, which does not require proof of but-for causation, still exists.
Thank you, Kristen. And we recently saw the government emphasizing this separate false certification pathway in a statement of interest filed in the Medtronic case pending in the District of Massachusetts.
Yes, late last month, the government filed a statement of interest in that case where it reiterated its position that plaintiffs need not establish but-for causation in False Claims Act cases premised on anti-kickback statute violations so long as the plaintiff establishes a false certification of compliance with the anti-kickback statute. Put differently, plaintiffs can allege False Claims Act violations wholly outside of the 2010 amendment to the anti-kickback statute, and by doing so, avoid altogether the question of which causation standard should apply. In its statement of interest in that case, the government also reiterated that even under the 2010 amendment to the anti-kickback statute, establishing but-for causation is not insurmountably difficult. The plaintiff need only prove causation by a preponderance of the evidence and can do so in a variety of ways, including circumstantial evidence and reasonable inferences.
So, Kristen, what should companies be thinking about as a result of this current split in the case law?
Well, it remains to be seen whether the Supreme Court ultimately decides to resolve this issue, though there is a high likelihood that the government will seek review of the First Circuit's decision in the Regeneron case. In the meantime, and particularly in ongoing government investigations, however, companies should, of course, understand which standard applies and be prepared to litigate the issue in those circuits with the less favorable some link standard. It is certainly possible that relators in the short term will seek to file cases in the Third, Second, Fourth, and Fifth Circuits, given the more favorable standard, and we're already seeing both defense counsel and DOJ use the issue in settlement negotiations. In those jurisdictions where the but-for causation standard applies, defendants should be prepared to utilize that more defendant-friendly standard as a key tool in defending against the claims, particularly during settlement negotiations and in dispositive motions. Regardless of how the cases continue to play out, the continued focus on anti-kickback statute violations show that this continues to be an area of high risk from a compliance perspective, and one that companies should continue allocating resources towards in terms of monitoring, risk assessment, training, and policies. While there's a good deal of uncertainty with the change in administration, the new administration has continued to indicate that False Claims Act cases will remain a priority, including in the healthcare space.
It will certainly be interesting to see whether the Supreme Court resolves this issue, and if so, how it will do so. The current composition of the bench would seem to favor a but-for causation standard that's consistent with the unambiguous statutory language. But as you noted, Kristen, regardless of whether the Supreme Court takes the case, these cases make clear that companies in highly regulated environments should continue to be sure they understand the relevant rules and regulations, seek guidance, and obtain legal advice on unclear issues, and continue to focus compliance program resources on high-risk areas. The False Claims Act and anti-kickback statutes certainly continue to remain powerful enforcement tools for the government and relators.
I completely agree, Emily. And with that, we want to thank you for joining us. We hope you found this podcast valuable.
The information presented in this recording is for educational purposes only. It does not constitute legal advice for a specific situation. If you wish to obtain legal advice, you should retain an attorney and explain the facts of your particular situation.